Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm and I'm happy to welcome you to another edition of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My guest this time is legendary American yachtsman Terry Hutchinson. Along with having won countless world championships in his time, Terry's also been involved in four America's Cups. But he's perhaps best known for his role as the tactician both on Doug DeVos's Quantum Racing TP52 and aboard Hat Fouth's Maxi 70 Bellamente. It's no surprise then that when DeVos, Fouth and fellow business titan Roger Penske joined forces with the New York Yacht Club to mount a challenge for the America's Cup, that it was Hutchinson they turned to lead the American Magic Syndicate. Now, the America's Cup has always been a secretive business, with the teams generally being tight-lipped about what's going on. This time is no different. So far, all the teams, and American Magic in particular, have been very cautious about granting media access. So I was delighted when Terry agreed to give me 30 minutes on Skype to quiz him on the latest state of play with the team. So let's get into it. Here's the interview. So Terry Hutchinson, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast. Let's first of all establish where I'm talking to you today. Where have I called you?
You've gotten me in Pensacola, Florida at ground zero for American Magic.
That's it. It's America's Cup time again for you. It's been a little while since you've been involved. I think you have done four America's Cups, and the last one team you're involved in was leading up to San Francisco.
That's correct.
Skipper of Artemis Racing. Now, you chose to walk away from that before the racing started. Was the America's Cup unfinished business for you?
Yes, very much so. It's unfinished business. And, you know, I think when I look around our team inside of American Magic, it's unfinished business for a lot of folks. And so I think we're all relying on that being part of our competitive advantage as we go forward.
So you're back in the Cup now. It's the New York Yacht Club's American Magic Syndicate.
Yes.
How did that whole thing come about? What was the driving force behind that initially?
The driving force, I think, started really with Doug DeVos and Hap Fouth and their vision to want to really have a crack at winning the regatta. You know, both those gentlemen have been quite successful in their business lives and quite successful on the water in both Quantum Racing and Bellamente. They shared a very like-minded vision of wanting to bring the America's Cup environment and the America's Cup culture back to American yachting and really help not only the generation that's going right now with the opportunity to go out and win the regatta, but really develop a foundation for bringing up the next generation of sailors. And, you know, I think what they have embarked upon, really, it's an unbelievable opportunity for all of us.
And both of those people that you mentioned, Hap and Doug, have both been involved in running Grand Prix campaigns, Hap.
Yes.
with the Bellamente Maxi 72 campaign, and Doug with the Quantum Racing TP52 campaign. And you've been involved in both of those. You've been an integral part in that. It seems to me that there's kind of this little movable team that goes with you from one campaign to the other. Have you built that sort of team for yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there you're using the operative word, which is the team. And, you know, one of the drivers behind the team is really developing a group of people that, you know, understand each other, and given everybody's strengths and weaknesses, can work through those and really develop a system that allows us to race the boat in a manner that, you know, we continually improve upon the day before, the race before, and we have an environment that there's good self-evaluation. And so as you make mistakes, you get better. In this environment, it's a much, you know, growing the team out. You know, Bellamente is a 30-person team from shore support to the bow. You know, you grow this team out, and we're we're around 100 people. And so developing that culture takes a lot more time. Developing, you know, a certain work ethos amongst a multinational team is tricky. And so, you know, the good thing is we have time to do that. A lot of our early decision making with American Magic brought in people that we had worked with in the past, so we could circumvent a lot of those relationships. And right now we're, you know, we have our test boat, the Mule, that we're out sailing and developing and learning about, you know, how we're going to have a more efficient AC-75. But 50% of the Mule was conceived and developed behind teaching the team how to operate. And, you know, one of the things that stands out is that there's always going to be room for improvement. We can always be better at it. We're far from a seamless operation. And that's the most encouraging thing, because we are achieving some consistency and some reliability on the water. And then the encouraging part of that is that you can see the foundation of American Magic being laid. You know, it's not without its arguments, and it's not without the discussions, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to build something for not only the next America's Cup, but the one after that. And, you know, as I'm continually reminded by, you know, we have three great principals now with Doug and Happ and Roger Penske. Every time we meet and every time we scrutinize whatever it is we're doing, it's part of the process of getting better and getting better as a team.
Because it's a real unique challenge, isn't it, to take a tilt at the America's Cup? Because unlike other sporting events, and I know Roger comes from a NASCAR background, but I don't think there's another event where the actual racing competition is so far away from when you start the team. You spend so much time anticipating this whole thing and building towards it.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Olympians would have a similar challenge, would they?
They do, but at least in the Olympic environment, you have 12 or 15 regattas in a season to baseline yourself against your competition, see where you're strong and where you're weak. I mean, right now we are, you know, it's January. So we're roughly 12 months, 10 months from our first competition. And so it's, you know, we have a long way to even get to that point. And, you know, to maintain the discipline and the development as we're working through the problems it's hard. You know, because day in and day out we're working, and for our principal's perspective, their unbelievable support is getting us to where we need to get to. But as you rightfully point out, the competition, you know, the main event is 24 months away. So, yeah, it is draining, but, you know, we also know that it is absolutely worth it. And so, I think the thing that excites me the most about it is that, you know, each turn and each cycle, that there's been an introduction of a new rule, the opportunity to gain and the opportunity to win with that is at your highest percentage. You know, so for our team, while we're flying under a new flag and a new brand, we're not new to sailboat racing, and we're certainly not new to the event. So I think it presents a real opportunity for us.
So tell us a little bit about your role as skipper and executive director of the team. What does that mean? Because that could mean a multitude of things.
Yeah, that means that, what does that mean? That means that I help support and facilitate in any given moment, any aspect of the team. So if there's a need within the sailing team, I help support that, and I help support Dean and Andrew and Goody and Coach and Nick and all the guys that are day in, day out sailing the boat. I certainly have every intention of racing the boat and being the tactician. But I also know the level that these guys are sailing the boat and the level that they need to operate for me to help support them while also helping support other aspects of the team. You know, it divides your time. And so the first conscious decision was to step away from fighting the instinct of wanting to steer the boat and work within my wheelhouse of strengths, and then also hand those responsibilities off to somebody else who was motivated, who has something to prove, and who is also has a skill set to do that job. And so in a very simple form, the team has grown out of that philosophy, and we certainly, I'm incredibly excited by the group of our shore team, of our design team, of our production team, and of our sailing team. You know, I can look across all areas of it and see unbelievable potential. And, as we continue to measure ourselves, if we have successes on the water, we're going to know why. And if we have failures on the water, we're going to know why.
I'm not sure if this is a fair question, but and if there is such thing as a typical day, but can you describe a typical day for Terry Hutchinson with this team?
No, that's a trick question. As much as I possibly can, I try to go to the gym with the sailing team and participate in the sailing activities. The beauty about being down in Pensacola is that we are a sailing operation down here, and so I want to be an integral part of the sailing team so that as the demands and the needs grow, there's a complete understanding of what those are. So when we go back to our principals or we're going out to companies inside the United States to help support us, we know exactly what the need is because living it day in and day out. But there's also helping the beauty of having the Silvio Arrivabenis and the Tim Hacketts of the world, the guys that are overseeing the production facility, or Marcelino Botin or Aldolfo. I mean, these guys are experts in their area. And so really my responsibility there is to help facilitate what they need, but it's also to not get in the way and allow them to do their jobs.
Is the structure reasonably flat then within the organization?
Define flat.
So it's not.
Are we a consensus-driven decision-making team? No, we're not.
So how do decisions get made?
With that, you get a camel. How do decisions get made? The senior management of the team is expected to make the decision and to back the people that they've hired within their area. And so, my job inside of that is to understand the pitfalls. And one of the unique opportunities that I'm learning here and having here is being able to work directly for Hap and Doug and Roger. I mean, these guys have, they're titans in their industry, and they've gotten there for a reason, and they're tough and they're demanding. And so what they're instilling in me, allows the opportunity to ask the same hard questions of our production team, of our design team, of our sailing team. It's a pretty unique experience that way. It's something that I've never done before. And so in that regard, it's quite challenging, but I think in the end, the people that we've hired are experts. And so you have to allow them to do their job. And as long as we continue to benchmark ourselves and set short-term goals, and whether we achieve them or miss the mark, having a good system in place where we're evaluating every 6 months, it gives you the opportunity to learn and get better. And, I know for a fact that we're not perfect at it. And at the same time, I can look out on the water and see the mules sailing around and doing what they're doing today. And it demonstrates a certain level of competency.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You've moved to Pensacola. It's sounding like a wise move given the polar vortex that's smashing into the.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's been pretty cold up in Newport. I don't think you'd be doing much sailing up there, the home base is. So how's that move down there for the winter worked out for you so far?
So far so good. We're achieving a reasonably high success rate of getting out on the water. It is cold. But you know, that's okay for what we need to do and for where we need to get to. It's serving its purpose. And you know, one of the unique things about Pensacola Bay is it's very flat, and it's very, you know, the U.S. Navy developed seaplanes here back in the 50s and the 60s, and so that by itself tells you the nature of the sea state. And from there, you know, it's given us a pretty consistent wind field. There's not a lot of obstructions in and around the bay, so the wind coming across it is pretty even. And you know, if there's a limiter when you go everywhere at high speed, you run out of space pretty quickly. So that's the limiter, but you can't have everything.
You cannot. And we've seen some amazing images and video even of the mule out sailing. I'm presuming you've been on board the boat for some of those training sessions.
Oh yeah.
So tell me, I'm desperate to know, what is it like to sail this boat?
It's the evolution starts out as, you know, the first day that I was on the boat when we foiled, it was quite windy. And some of the systems weren't operating perfectly. And so the boat was a bit loose and we were a bit out of control. And that was exactly how it felt. You know, it was almost like getting into a car with my 16-year-old son driving for the first time, just wondering what could possibly go wrong. And as you evolve and as you listen to the communication between Dean and Andrew and Goody and the level of calm that's in their voice, it's what you quickly realize is the level of experience that you have and that we have as a team. And very quickly you go from nervous anticipation to getting into the routine of just doing your job on the boat. And when Cicho and I switch off between trimming the jib and sitting up in the front of the boat and learning, you know, how to go fast. And so for me, it's a really, really, it's an unbelievable experience. It's probably some of the most fun that I've had just sailing, because the boat is so different and the sensation of speed is impressive. And yet, you know, I've spent the better part of a month now sailing around at 30 something knots, and you know, it's becoming normal.
So when you're on these training sessions now, what are you focusing on? Is it just sucking data into the database that's going to be analyzed and giving the designers something to work with, or you know, is it straight line stuff, or are you guys managing to get maneuvers into that whole thing? I think that's interesting to understand.
Yeah, the boat, it's a great question, because the initial concept of the boat was more of a sailing team device, and it grew out of that. You know, we had a lot of, I'd say we had to convince ourselves a little bit that it was the right thing to do, because it was a big drain in our resource. And so in that, it grew into I know we're going to do two boats over this program, but we probably will end up doing three, because this boat is such a unique tool for us. And it's half size, but it's definitely not half size in what's inside of it and how we're learning how to really sail the boat. But it covers the entire team, and what you quickly gain from it is what you just don't know in all the systems, in the sails, and you know, just every single day the guys were coming off the water with more questions than we are answers to problems and to what we're trying to learn. Without question, as you touched on earlier, it feeds back into design, and there are certain things there that feed into how we're going to race boat one and then on to boat two. But with limited foils for boat one and boat two and limited sails, it's providing a really good opportunity to at least start developing some of those concepts.
And am I right in thinking right now everything is powered by batteries? You're not.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're not grinding winches to trim sails or anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And any surprises so far? I haven't seen anything that says you guys have capsized. The Brits have confessed to wiping out a few times in their quant.
Yeah, there's been some great video of those guys going over. You know, our issues, I mean, I don't think it's unknown that when we've tipped over, it's all been at slow speeds. So it's not when the boat's up and going, everything's done. You know, our mistakes come down speed, out of attack. When the boat's the most vulnerable and you're just getting off the tow, that's when you have your biggest issues.
That's just
the nature of the beast. The thing is so much like a dinghy at 6 knots. It's like stepping on the side of your laser, but at 26 knots, it's as stable as they come. It's impressively stable, actually.
And I think you mentioned there that the tow. So you guys on occasion are having to tow to get up to foiling speed. Is that correct?
No. Just like when you're hoisting sails and such. You know, when you hoist, you're sitting on the tow, on a side tow, like you would in the catamaran. So
gotcha.
You know, we saw the images of those guys sitting head to wind in Bermuda, and it's the same deal. You know, here you hoist and you're on the side tow. So when you go to spike off that side tow is when the boat's the most vulnerable.
Gotcha.
We've got ourselves into the most trouble.
Gotcha. And then does it take very much to get the boat up and foiling if you're in the right wind strength?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's again, that side of it is probably a bit surprising at the efficiencies of it. You know, it's a great, this boat and the Quant to a certain extent was a great proof of concept. And so I think we were all a bit surprised at how easily it popped up out of the water and away it went. And yet then you start sailing in this, you know, much like we did in our TP-52 that you saw this summer. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, well now we're going. Well, now what do we do? So then you quickly start the dialogue of refinement and drawing out of each session that we're testing, you know, the things that we're learning, which isn't as, you know, it sounds very simple saying it to you, but sitting and listening to the meetings, again, I'm not sure of all the conclusions that we're getting. I know we have a lot of questions, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry to cut across you. Do you think there's a, I mean, we've heard recently that the Kiwis have decided not just to rely on a simulator, but to build themselves a test boat as well. Do you think that's partly because of the success you guys have been having down in Pensacola?
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I know for us, it's hard to speak about what they're doing, but for us, the process that we've gone through, each step was a very, there was a method behind why we did it. And, you know, each team is in a different stage of development. For us, we're, you know, we have, you know, 100 some people that we have to learn how to talk to each other, and we have to learn how to develop and how to, you know, over the course of the next 24 months, go from, you know, being able to execute day in and day out to regatta winning. And, you know, Ben is in a different spot. Team New Zealand's in a different spot. And Lunarosa's in a different spot. So yeah, it's hard to truly know, what would motivate you to do it in a different order.
And given what you've learned from the mule, from that scale down model of the boat, when you close your eyes and try and imagine what the full size boat is going to be like to sail, what does that look like?
I don't know. I know when I go sailing on my Moth, and I'm really not, I'm about as bad as they come. It's more of a swimming lesson than it is a sailing lesson. But when you scale up to the mule, the mule is a much tamer ride than the Moth. And so I would suspect if you scale up from the mule to the 75, you know, you're going to feel like you're going from a sports car to a bit of a bus. And yet that's simply through the size of the boat and nothing else. I don't know if that makes any sense, but when I crash in my Moth, I know about it. You crash on the mule, you know, the boat touches down, you get a little wet, and it just keeps ripping along. So,
yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and I guess that kind of leads me on into the question of safety, because I've heard it kind of discussed about the next America's Cup that capsizing the 75s is going to be a factor. Boats are going to be capsizing. And we even saw it back in Bermuda with the Kiwi's spectacular nosedive. I know with all of the professional sailing teams, whether it's America's Cup, Volvo Ocean Race, Vendée Globe, safety is the number one priority all of the time. So I think that's a given with you guys. But can you talk about that a little bit and what you're doing to keep the sailors safe and keep yourselves safe?
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know, when we're out on the water, we have two divers that assist us. You know, we're sailing with spare air. We're sailing with all the necessary gear that if the boat ends up upside down on top of you, you have the, you know, you have an extended way of surviving the situation. The divers have put us through training courses in the swimming pools and, you know, helped us become comfortable with our gear in the water. And, you know, beyond that, the boat, to me, having the experience from, you know, I never sailed a foiling AC-72, but, you know, the limited time that I had in that boat, you know, it was a big boat. It was intimidating. And, you know, over the course of time, you got more and more comfortable with it. But there's something about, you know, this boat that doesn't feel, you don't feel, I personally don't feel as exposed in this boat as I did in the catamaran. And maybe, maybe ignorance is blind, you know? So there could be an element of that. But, you know, we've had a couple good little, nose dives here and there, and the boat pops up and off you go. We're in the multi-hull, you know, as we saw in Bermuda, you know, it's difficult for the boat to recover from a nosedive, from a down speed, you know, nosedive, where, you know, the sheer volume in the bow of these boats, I think, will help. But you're always going to be exposed to some risk. You know, nothing is risk-free. Our TV-52 is not risk-free.
One of the criticisms of the Cup since it's moved into this high-performance foiling world is that it's not match racing. There's no match racing anymore in it. And yet in Bermuda and even in San Francisco, we saw, I thought we saw lots of evidence of good boat-on-boat match racing in the pre-start mainly. Have you been able to give any thought to what the match racing tactics might look like in these kind of boats? Because there was an evolution of those tactics for the catamarans.
Yeah. Candidly, not yet. You know, we haven't started really even thinking about it. And yet I know if I get bored, I go back and watch a lot, as much as you can watch that's available online. I go back and watch some of the racing just to do exactly what you talk about, just to kind of just start thinking about the nuances of it. But we're so far away from that, that all of our effort and energy is being put into trying to develop the systems and then from there, a fast design.
Okay. I'm conscious of time, so I'm going to start to wrap this up a little bit. I didn't want to pass up on the opportunity just to ask you about the second American team that's been announced, which is Taylor Canfield and Mike Buckley with the Stars and Stripes Team USA. Any thoughts on those guys? Because I think you must know them pretty well.
No, I haven't. Really given it. I don't really give it a lot of thought. It's you know, in my mind, we have one objective, and that's to win the regatta. And so, if they're there, great. If they're not there, it doesn't really impact us because it doesn't change the goal.
Okay, good answer. So time is always of the essence with professional yachting campaigns, and we talked about the kind of countdown to this goal that seems quite a long way away, but really probably isn't.
Yeah.
And the first milestone, I guess, is going to be this event in Italy in October of this year, which, again, for me, boggles my mind that no boats have been built yet, and yet we're talking about a regatta in this year.
Yeah. Thoughts Stand on by. That?
You think it might
Stand
slip?
By. You know, I think it's one of those situations that, you know, you can see exactly what you're talking about, and I think all the competitors can see it. I think that the challenger of record, and in particular Mr. Bertelli, you know, they're working very hard to try to make all these things happen. And, you know, you can never ever, you know, you can never criticize their level of enthusiasm for it. And, you know, I think what he's taken on here is awesome. You know, they pulled out of the last one, with a clear vision of what they want the America's Cup to be. And, you know, everything that we've seen from the Challenger of Records, they're very committed to that vision. They're very committed to having a fair regatta, you know, and they're very committed to making sure that we do things in the right manner. So I would leave it for them to determine over the course of time whether or not it's executable. But in any capacity, if they say, yep, we're going to do it, then we support it. And we'll be there with a smile on our face in whatever capacity we can be there in. And if they think it's the right thing to slide, then there'll always be a good logic behind it. So the one thing, you know, and it probably a little bit of, you know, to your question earlier as well about the second U.S. team. I mean, Challenger Record, the second U.S. team, they all, you know, we all share the same vision in wanting to improve the sport. You just have to read what they're saying about it. And so in that capacity, I think it's, I think what they're trying to do and to try to take on is, you know, it's exciting. It's the same vision that Doug had with the Super Series back in 2007 and 8 when the numbers were very low. But he and Nicholas and Mr. Ramirez, they stuck together with the 52. And, you know, now you go out and last season there were 9 new boats built. So all these guys share a vision to make our sport better. And, you know, for us, if we can make it happen, we'll be there supporting them.
So the time scale or the timetable now for American Magic between now and let's say that that event or the end of this year, what does it look like? What are the key milestones?
Key milestones are launching boat one in the middle of the summer and then slowly working through the process of getting that boat up to speed. And then from there, go off to a regatta in late October. And then from there, we have to decide, between now and then, we have to decide how we're going to use our time and what the regatta schedule looks like in 2020. You know, one of the challenging things that we have there is that by the protocol, the end of March, they have to tell us the 2019 schedule. And the end of November, they have to tell us the schedule for 2020. They being the Defender and the Challenger of Record. And so those November in particular is quite late for planning in 2020. So we have to, you know, we have to develop a training schedule that fits some flexibility and allows us to keep sailing our boat for as long as possible. And those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. So I'm sure there's a lot of, good debate and conversations that will happen between now and then between all teams.
And in that interim period before you have a boat to mm-hmm. to launch and to learn how to sail, and, mm-hmm. and I just think it's daunting to have to learn how to sail a boat like that, and you can't do it in private. Mm. Is there any opportunity for the sailing team to do other sailing to kind of gel as a sailing team, or is it all going to be on the foiling boat?
No, I think a lot of it's going to be on the foiling boat. I mean, you know, 2018 for American Magic, which was very much of a racing development year. You know, we pushed ourselves to race the TP52 and we pushed ourselves to match race. And, you know, Goody went off and pushed himself to do the Moth Worlds and to do certain, you know, we all chose different sailing, be it together or independent, just to keep the skills sharp. 2019, we have to focus on developing a fast sailboat. And then in 2020, we'll have to do exactly what you just talked about, which is find opportunities to go and race and, you know, in a lot of ways, redevelop the racing skills at high speed. But if we don't have a fast boat, I'm quite certain it's not, it doesn't matter how well we race a slower boat, you're probably not going to win. So we have to make sure we work hard on developing a fast boat.
So that's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to Terry Hutchinson, skipper and executive director of the New York Yacht Club's American Magic America's Cup Syndicate, for taking the time out of his busy schedule to speak to me. And thanks also to you for listening. If you like this episode, there are plenty more to listen to. And if you have a moment, give the podcast a star rating or maybe even leave a review. Thanks if you're able to do that. It may seem like a really small thing, but it makes a big difference to the podcast. So until the next episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast, I'll say goodbye for now and sail fast, everyone.